Thank you, everybody, for having me. Dieter, yeah, Sven, thanks for the introduction. Isabel, I think I have some resonances with some of the things you raised, which is cool as well. Oh, there we go. Okay. Since the moment of the ready-made's creation and subsequent popularization and canonization, much has changed in the way we experience the relevant forces that emerged from and responded to. As has been identified by many in this conference already, the production of art is not only very different, but so is the commercial and political context the ready-made was produced under. We no longer live in the paradigm of the human-run factory, and resultant mass commodities for worker markets with politics and labor relations of the early or mid-20th century. If a urinal were produced today, it would very likely be completely made by machine with zero human labor involved, and this is a lights-off factory, so nobody works there. Apart from machines. Under our emerging and accelerating paradigm of platform capitalism or cognitive capitalism or computational capitalism, whatever you call it, the site of human labor and value extraction is increasingly in looking, liking, retweeting, and chatting. Communication itself has become the value extractive process. Affective and communicative labor, which is at the moment only monetized and indeed only monetizable as ever more accurate and targetable advertising eyeballs, by a small number of giant global or large regional, in the case of China or maybe Russia, commercial and governmental organizations like Netflix, Facebook, Amazon, etc., is always in dialogue with the aggregating network effects of platforms. Yeah. When I was asked to relate my work somehow to the context of the ready-made, I reached out to Sven, who suggested that my work's appropriation of and intervention in corporate design and branding might be relevant as a kind of, as he said, post-ready-made strategy focusing not on specific objects but on organizations and their self-presentation. Sounds good. I'm going to try and do that. If platforms are increasingly the site of labor extraction today, and what is indeed ready-made comes in the form of identities, maybe, and in infinitely categorizable or subcategorizable markets, organizational aggregators and their aggregating algorithms are the dominant cultural formulators in our experience. The ready-made as organization presentation is witness to the effects of organizational rhetoric narrating technology to the effects of innovators and organizations as political actors changing the site of labor, indeed perhaps in a way changing up, catching up to a weird reading that I thought of Duchamp's site of production reinterpreted in today's labor paradigm, of looking, promoting, and sharing, of speculation as rhetoric, of documentation and context as maker, and of looking as outsourced labor for capital. With the ready-made, Duchamp maybe becomes the platform, the container for increased value by those who made the artwork, the humans and machines in the factory producing the object, the rejected salon, the photographer and the zine as circulation, and the labor of who we look at and compete and complete the work in our encounter of it, plus the labor of canon-creating museums, collectors, galleries, and journals. The ready-made retains all of that value as an aggregative platform, maybe. My work in recent years has been in some ways an attempt to grapple with the fact that culture is made in the shadow of these larger structures, that whether we know it or not, like it or not, these are the formulations and forces that frame our experiences and agency. Here are a few highlights from my projects that interrogate that space, that try to unpack the narratives given to us by these powerful actors and highlight the gaps between the message they want to give us and our experience of those stories as a kind of register of the dominant and emergent narratives offered to us as they shape our lives and experience. I'll look at three projects today that play on this with differing dynamics. One that looks at a prominent German tech conference in 2012, possibly the height of the making of Web 2.0, I would say. The emergent web of value, or Web 3.0, will be my next kind of project snippet of blockchain, which was mentioned yesterday. A whole new value paradigm, I would say. And a project from this year that looked at the rhetoric and politics of one of the strongest oppositions to this paradigm from within, another conference to do with tech, this time at the European Parliament, which is, by the way, I think the only credible opposition to growing platform capitalism. This is a poster for All You Need Is Data, a project that I developed at first at the Munich Kunstverein in 2012, which incidentally Oliver Larrick was speaking at. My first attempt in interpreting these those individuals and organizations responsible for building and scaling Web 2.0. This person is perhaps one of the most politically impacting figures of this group, who perhaps unintentionally built the context and infrastructure for the direction of politics and culture today. His name is Chris Poole, better known by the online name of Moot. Poole was responsible for the building of the now infamous, then a little bit obscure, in wider culture maybe, platform called 4chan, which is generally thought of as where memes were born, as a format where anonymous activists came together, and as now recently thought of as one of the most important sites of production for the new right movements that narrated the cultural shift in the States towards Trump, if not directly impacted on his ascension. Here's the poster. Sits alongside one of the most revealing things that was said at the conference as he was speaking it, the DLD Digital Life Design Conference in Munich. Said at a keynote by another very powerful actor or cultural figure and business person, Sheryl Sandberg, the CEO of Facebook at the time. So she said, a lot of the new rules are being written by the people who don't even know they're writing them. For the exhibition, I transcribed and edited all footage of the conference and reissued it in an edited version, which I felt contained the most poignant and telling quotes from this group. I distilled the aesthetics and experience of the conference as part of this message. The set here that you see is an elaborate form of stage design derived from a TV set design and made for webcast. This represents a kind of future Alps, apparently, and this is a kind of sister stage which it kind of represented a kind of woody interior, which was an Alps of the past. So the kind of the passing of time was created and contained within the set design. Then I edited quotes that were in these panels and printed them in a graphic style that exaggerated the dominant iOS platform of the time. Obviously, this was iOS 5, I think, and everybody at this conference was using iPhone already, which is pretty interesting. That's a little snippet there. It's called Skeuomorphism, but it wasn't only used as a slide design. It wasn't only just a kind of interface design. It was also kind of used in slide design during the conference, here evidenced in Brian Chesky of Airbnb's slide, carrying his main point for this talk, a phrase which today seems frankly ridiculous, as platform capitalism has proved its opposite to be true. The idea that access is more powerful than ownership is directly, ironic. Back to Poole. Here's the stage he spoke on again, and here the canvas I designed and printed, reflecting on the stage and framing these quotes. So here he says, many people are underestimating how public they are on social networks. People don't understand. Data is the oil of the 20th century. You cannot have real freedom of speech without being able to be anonymous. Not sure if that's true anymore. No, I don't think privacy is dead yet, etc. 2012 was an innocent time. Here, the woody stage, two generations of influential Silicon Valley family, the Dysons, with some more revealing quotes. The world is unfortunately driven more by politics than facts, and I certainly believe very strongly in the privatization of human space. Kind of nice pair to like talk about Silicon Valley values. I organized this material into another format that underlined the inflexibility of the space, the directive feeling of being on the Facebook timeline, which is now our feed, where all canvases face triumphantly forward and looking back to the past. As you walked through the timeline physically, you could see nothing. It was also a dead end. So once you reached Sandberg's final keynote, where she said that quote that I quoted before, you had to turn around and retrace your steps back through the skeuomorphic paintings. The last slide, the last kind of canvas I want to kind of look at, a few quotes from Twitter founder Jack Dorsey, again, something that's increased in political value. I think that services like Twitter make possible a more direct democracy based on feedback, and I believe that free information helps the world. Now to another project. So blockchain future states shown in Berlin last year at last year's Berlin Biennale grappled with the reflecting of the narratives accompanying the emergent web paradigm of the so-called web of value or web 3.0. Defined by anticipated widespread adoption of blockchain, the software that the networked distributed computing infrastructure protocol birthed and popularized with Bitcoin. This emergent web has yet to see its full impact, but its growth and level of investment in capital and talent is vast and quick, and its critics are as strong as its proponents. Those who are pro are often wildly utopic and say it will be the people's answer to the dominance of these aggregating platforms, where participants who build products and services on it effectively own equity in their own projects as they build through the appreciation of financial value, through attention value that could be captured and stored in these kind of new liquid digital tokens associated with any business or identity. Those who criticize the emergent platform call it out as hypermonetization of the web, where micropayments could effectively make charging for even an email very possible, and whose liquidity and tendency to be beyond normal financial regulatory checks and balances come through the existing centralized financial systems between banks and states, promise a kind of mainstreaming of the financial logic of free marketism. And Wall Street across all networks. So if you think we live in a financialized world today, just wait for the blockchain. They also point out that the distrust of centralized banking systems has echoes of possible anti-Semitism. They're also critical of the fact that Austrian economics like Hayek's principles of self-organizing markets has been very influential to the development of that technology. Anyway, so here the perfect venue, I thought, for questioning this possibly inevitable direction in global information technology. A global technology and management school in the shell of a former communist institution, the Staatsratsgebäude. Here in a disused room, I presented three fictitious trade fair booths about three real blockchain companies, each boldly showcasing their vision for blockchain, each with a novelty postage stamp design as their centerpiece. So I made a kind of a collaboration with a stamp designer who works on the Bundespost stamps here in Berlin. Stamps, for me, were a way to distill and foreground the issues that I saw as having most impact on the familiar, in one familiar object. Stamps are symbols for the financial system accompanying distribution. They're exclusively issued by states and contain themes and values endorsed by such states. The venue also allowed a dialogue with aesthetic choices and symbolism of organizations in different paradigms, foregrounding technology as a key aspect of utopic visions. In fact, here in the empty, still unused room of the former communist of the GDR contains a leftover aluminium illustrated sound insulation mural kind of at the back there, depicting a dove flying over smokestacks and test tubes. Industrial technology leads to peace. The first organization I used the identity of was Digital Asset, a company founded by banking superstar at Blythe Masters, who worked at JP Morgan in the 1990s developing credit default swaps, who generated the biggest seed funding round in history for this company. This version of blockchain, if enacted by this company and scaled up beyond all other models, would see centralized banking keep its monopoly on the monetary system, where blockchain would essentially automate a bunch of processes usually done by people, causing banks to lower costs and trade faster, no doubt inventing more financial innovation along the way. As is in some of the most conservative versions of blockchains, the aesthetics are I wanted the aesthetics to be close to banking. The booth is classical. There's fake woodcuts, and the form of stamp design derives from kind of British Queen's Head classics. The twist on the design is there's kind of like a centralized network diagram that kind of builds into the design. Blythe's classical heads skew towards the American Federal Reserve System's headquarters in the center. The next booth and next company is 21.co, whose then vision for Bitcoin was that it would become a supranational monetary system protocoled into the our internet as the money protocol, enabling a total synthesis of money to the web. This was intended to promote a money system beyond nation states and supported Balaji Srivinathan, the founder's vision for exit, a notion elaborated in a talk given at startup school Y Combinator in 2012, where building nations outside of existing systems is lusted for. Here, the booth is more kind of decentralized in its language. The kind of language of a network-like trust system makes up a less conventional design, and the aesthetics of the presenter are more kind of street. The stamp has the stamp that I made with him has an asymmetrical design and features 21's computers built for those programming on top of the Bitcoin protocol, floating over a stylized version of Silicon Valley. It's a in a tweet which I extrapolated into the booth design and the stamp, Srivinathan spoke of the nationalist land versus the technologist cloud, an emergent vision of the dividing lines of the future under blockchain. The final and most disruptive booth imagined Vitalik Buterin's Ethereum as defining the future of blockchain, a prediction that right now looks to be not so far off. Ethereum's token Ether gained in value roughly 5,000% since I made its installation, and those working on some of the most prominent companies in the blockchain space work with its smart contract enabling blockchain as their basis. Companies building on this network claim to create decentralized autonomous organizations and even nation states where a new form of collective governance happens on the blockchain. The booth at this time literally rips a hole in the floor of the communists' carpet, and the stamp's format is kind of almost eating itself. Its perforations are destroying the form of the stamp. The aesthetic is taken from gaming. Magic-style card paintings depicts Vitalik flying above the earth with network theorist Paul Barron and the familiar Hayek and von Mises in the background. The questioning of rhetoric practices of those who most effectively oppose and disagree with Silicon Valley is the final project, which I want to talk about very briefly. In June this year, I was invited to speak at a summit at the European Parliament, really the only regulatory body, as I said, that challenges global tech in any kind of depth. The summit looked at the EU's role in the next generation internet over 2 days. I attended with a group of critical artists and friends and brought along a top-level graphic facilitator, a genre of live illustration native to tech conferences where a live felt tip drawing is generated to illustrate the speakers as they speak. So here she is working with me. Yeah, exactly. Instead of illustrating the rhetoric of the speakers directly, the editing process, I used this time, I asked the illustrator to live illustrate a feed of critical commentary generated by me and the other attendant artists and critics I came with, and the official voice of the parliamentary speakers. The illustrator was here performing the position of today's internet user, forced to synthesize official narratives from news services or politicians and competing counter-narratives from a cacophony of social feedback channels. Here is a, this is what the kind of drawings then looked like, a kind of, aggregation of both official narrative and kind of feedback response. And here is, here's some little moments from it where there's, kind of moments that she kind of distilled from what we were saying. And then I then represented it in the Parliament. I restaged the drawings as produced in the Parliament in the Beaux-Arts in another part of Brussels a couple months later that again recalls the timeline of one of my DLD plenals, to kind of full circle it here. An existing language of drawing, the visual language of TEF conferences, reflects on the official voice of Parliament as reinterpreted, trolled, and criticized from hybrid visual language. Feedback as a critical service. That's all I'll say today.